This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf. How about a cold one on the patio during a nice spring day? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This is the GM Shuffle.
And Cliff's not a culture builder, never was one. And then you bring a quarterback in who's the anti-culture. How do you think Billy Beane's not celebrating?
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Welcome to another edition of the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. I'm your host, Femi Abebefe. As always, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Our producer, Stephen Bond, with us on the ones and twos. Michael, boy, week number 9, it was the witchiest of witching hours, but let's start with Sunday night football.
You're just chomping. You're so pissed off at Stephen Bond because he wouldn't let you have your Justin Fields conversation until the C block. You're like the kid who wants to open up his Christmas gifts on 3 days before Christmas. You know, you just want to get there. You just can't help yourself. You want to get there. I don't know what facts you're bringing to the table, but you just can't wait to get there. You know, you just can't. But we'll get there.
Yeah, it's a table of two right now, but maybe more might be joining us later on there. But Michael, Sunday night football, we saw the Kansas City Chiefs beat the Tennessee Titans 20-17. In overtime, despite my love for that Dolphins-Bears game, I think this Sunday night game was probably my favorite game from the entire slate. Just the contrast in the styles between what Tennessee was doing and what Kansas City was doing. Titans almost pulling off the upset as 14-point dogs.
Well, I mean, look, if you don't think Mike Vrabel's a great coach, then you didn't watch the game last night. Now, think about this, Femi. Think about this. For just a moment, with 5:24 to go in the second quarter, 5:24 to go in the second quarter, when they scored their 14th point, the Tennessee Titans went on to play another 9 minutes, then they played another 30 minutes, and then they played another, so they played 39 minutes of football, and then say 4 minutes in overtime. So they played another 44 minutes of football, okay? Mm-hmm. They got one first down. And they got the game to overtime. And the only way the game got to overtime was because Mahomes had to make these incredible runs with his feet. Like, that to me, I mean, they averaged 4.8 yards per play. I mean, it was a joke. The fact that Tennessee, like, you know, after a game, I gave out Kansas City as one of my plays yesterday. I don't regret it. I really don't. I think it was the right play. I think I had the game handicapped perfectly because I didn't think Tennessee would move the ball. I didn't think they'd score 17 points. I grant you that. But I thought Kansas City would score 28, 30. I thought they would cover. You know, I thought they would move the ball more effectively. I knew it would be hard, but I thought they would move it more effectively. But look, that was a great, great job by Mike Vrabel. My hat's off to him. What he was able to accomplish with no quarterback at all, none. Guy had what? What did he have, 6 completions in the game?
That's 5.
Five? I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, and if you're Kansas City, you win the game, but you're like, really, did we win? I mean, where are we? We got beat up. I mean, Mahomes took – I mean, he got the shit kicked out of him yesterday.
Yeah. I thought just the fact that Tennessee was able to stay in that game, I completely agree with you, Mike Vrabel and the job that he did, that coaching staff, that defense. I mean, they played 91 games. We talk about defenses playing doubleheaders, Michael. That might have been a triple header. What the Tennessee Titans were doing there on defense, and the fact that they still held Kansas City to just 20 points, you got to tip your cap to those guys. But Vrabel, we'll get to Kansas City in just a bit, but on the Vrabel point here, is he, outside of maybe Bill Belichick, the best strategist that we have in the NFL?
Yeah, you know, and we wrote about this for the Daily Coach today about strategists, and I think Vrabel clearly is. I mean, look, he's got 13 drives in the game, okay? 8 punts. He had one drive. He had 2 drives that scored. He had 11 drives that had 1 first down or less. He got 3 points off of no first down. And he played basically 40 minutes with 1 first down. And he was able to stay attached in the entire game. And he stayed attached in the entire game. I mean, I think it was unbelievable. I think his defense has got, and I've said this, I thought his defense has gotten better and better as the year's gone on. His offensive line is bad. Like, I don't understand how Spagnuolo even gave him 14 points. I mean, why didn't you just line up? Like, if I were playing them, I would have lined up in goal line defense. I don't give a shit what the what was on. You know, remember that game, match game that used to, that was on television?
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, I'll match with you. You know, well, there's match game that goes on in the NFL, right? So I used to say this about, we had a defense coordinator when I was in Oakland. You know, that if there was no time left on the clock and there's 1 second to go and the ball's at midfield and we're up by 4 points, you know, if the opponent would put out short yardage, he would have matched it. He plays match game all the time, right? So, like, why would you just match any formation Tennessee put on the field? They have to give the ball to Henry. They can't let Willis beat you. So play short yardage defense the whole time. Just play 5 down linemen, play 2 linebackers, and make him, and just set the edge on both sides so he can't run it. They did it in the second half, but what did it take to the second half to do it? Like, it made no sense to me. And Vrabel's just playing doubleheader on defense. It didn't bother him. Man, I think I'm amazed. I think the guy's an incredible head coach.
Yeah, and I'm truly amazed, honestly, as well. I bet the Titans yesterday afternoon. I said, hey, if it hits 14, I'm going to go ahead and bet them, because in spots like this, you can trust Mike Vrabel to grind out the edges required to keep a game close. But I thought, Michael, the biggest play of the game was this, and I'll see if you agree with me. 3rd and 17 with 7:11 left in regulation. At that point, when Mahomes scrambled and got outside of the contain to get that 20-yard run there for the first down, that's when I thought, okay, Kansas City is going to win this game. Because if the Titans get that stop, I think Tennessee wins.
Yeah, I mean, and look, I thought they were going to call holding. They called holding on a similar play earlier in the game, and they didn't call holding on that. And I guess that the right tackle really didn't pull him as much. And so he was able to get out of there. Look, if Mahomes doesn't run in this game, if Mahomes doesn't take off and run,
they lose.
I mean, there's no game. I mean, he, you know, basically they had to run the 6-back offense for them to be successful. I mean, he literally had to take off. I agree with you. That was the backbreaker. And really, more than anything, the backbreaker was his other run. I mean, he had a 20-yard run. You know, he's 6 carries in the game for 63 yards. The guy threw it 68 times. He had 25 incompletions. He threw it 68 times for 443 yards. He took 4 sacks. I mean, it's, you know, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm with you. And then he had a scramble in for the touchdown.
Yeah. And the 2-point conversion.
And then the 2-point conversion. Right? Like, and meanwhile, they got, I'm sure you enjoyed watching Clint Leakman. I mean, Blakeman,
oh,
I know
God.
I did. I love watching him referee a game. I mean, everybody, every play's a penalty with this bastard. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Enough of this guy.
Yeah. I mean, but look, give him credit. I mean, the fact that he went into the game with Willis as his backup quarterback 2 weeks in a row, to me, is remarkable.
Yeah, the Chiefs had 499 yards of total offense. They're 91 plays, 5.5 yards per play. But I think last night was why we saw that Patrick Mahomes is the undisputed best quarterback in the NFL. Michael, the mighty have fallen in the great state of Wisconsin there. Green Bay.
Oh,
the two-time,
I got to get my phone out.
Yes,
I got to get my phone out.
Get the phone out. We got to pull up the text messages, because the 2-time reigning MVP, he's won 4 of them in his career overall. Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers, they fall to the Detroit Lions 15-9. It is their 5th straight loss this season. They're now 3-6. I tweeted about it yesterday watching that game. I said, this is the idiot Olympics between Matt LaFleur and Dan Campbell there. But Detroit gets the win nonetheless. We got to congratulate those guys. But, boy, I'm sure it was a rough Sunday afternoon for our guy Big Daddy.
Well, Big Daddy, you know, Big Daddy has a he has an evergreen text that usually happens. Let's see, what time did this come in here?
First quarter.
Yeah, I mean, at 2:15, Big Daddy announced Packers will lose to the Lions. I mean, like at 2:15. I mean, it's not even at halftime yet, and you know. I mean, it's just, and he's only, remember, Big Daddy's only watching this on the red zone. Big Daddy doesn't have, he doesn't come, I mean, he couldn't come over to the house yesterday because I had my two sons' games on the TV. So, but he doesn't come over to watch the direct TV. He's privy to Scott Hansen, who he has a lot of commentary on as well. So, you know, he's only getting snippets of the game, you know, and so at 2:15, he announced the game was over. Now, that tweet happens usually somewhere between 2 and 2:30 every single week. I mean, every single week. But to lose to the Lions is the ultimate slap in Big Daddy's face, and especially when LaFleur does LaFleur-like things, like go for it on fourth down. You know, like, why not take the 3 points? Build a little confidence, right? You know, take the 3 points. And then how about that goal? How about that unbalanced tight end offensive tackle? I mean, nice idea, maybe not the right time, right?
Yeah, that Aiden Hutchinson ended up having the interception on that play. Rodgers trying to target David Bakhtiari. Rodgers, and we've talked a lot about LaFleur, Michael, but Rodgers has to shoulder some of this blame as well. He looks bad, and I don't know if it's the thumb issue that's kind of hampering him here, but the red zone picks, this is a guy that has been the safest quarterback in the history of the game. For a quarterback who's thrown as many touchdowns as he's thrown and as many yards as he's thrown the fewest interceptions of guys in that range. What's going on with him?
Well, I don't think he got dumb all of a sudden. You know, I think like a lot of things, if you watch the Packer game, if you watch the Ram game later in the night, you know, when the receivers don't do exactly what they're supposed to do, you know, the quarterback becomes the victim. I'm not defending Rodgers, but Rodgers didn't just become a bad a ball protector overnight. You know, he didn't just become a three-interception guy. I mean, he's got a lot of guys that aren't doing the things he needs to do. There's no detail or attention to their offense. You know, now, I'm an idiot, and here's why I'm an idiot. I thought last week that after Buffalo game that LaFleur would have flown back to Green Bay, landed at the airport and said, okay, fellas, we got to change. We're going to run the ball. We're going to give Dylan the ball. We're going to give Jones the ball. We're going to go in there. We're going to run it. We're going to get in two tight ends. We're going to move things around. We're changing what we're doing. And we can beat the Lions if we just control the ball and don't turn it over. A strategist. Yep. Isn't that a novel idea? How about somebody strategizing how we're going to play the game in three dimensions? Of course not. Let's just go out there and continue to do what we do and that we know doesn't work, even against a shitty Lions team. I mean, you can't get any worse than – I mean, to be the biggest slap in Big Daddy's face is the fact that the Lions are the worst defense in all of football, and you still couldn't move the ball on them.
Yeah, that was really, really bad. I thought the Packers could at least get to 24 points in this game. Apparently, they had other plans. The way that this
they
is
lost
going,
the game.
Though,
think about this. Think about this, Femi.
Yep.
They gained 5.3 yards, 5.6 a carry, the 5.6 a play. They allowed 4.5 a play. But when you turn the ball over, when you have 8 penalties for 81 yards, and you give your opponent, nobody ever talks about this. I look at it every week. How many first downs on penalties do you give your opponent? They gave them 4. The Lions had 19 first downs, 4 by penalty. 4. You turn the ball over 3 times, you have 8 penalties for 81 yards, you have nothing in the return game. I mean, you can't do shit on the return game, right? You do nothing there. And you're giving away plays. You're giving away plays. It just shows you the guy is, as we wrote about today, he's a schemer. Not that he's a very good schemer. I want to say that very clearly. He's not a great schemer. Like, this isn't, we're not talking about the second coming of Sid Gilman here now. Let's just not confuse LaFleur with Sid Gilman. Let's just put that out there. You know, and he's not even Francis Schmidt. You know who Francis Schmidt is?
No.
Francis Schmidt was the guy that went to Ohio State that basically wanted to throw the football. He was one of the forerunners of the passing game. And they called him Fanatical Francis. And he was kind of crazy. And yet he wanted to throw it all over the lot. You would drive by his house at night, and he would be in his office. He would be in his office of his house, and the lights would be on, and he would be like John Nash. He had all different color pencils that he was drawing pass plays with, and nobody at Ohio State embraced it except for Sid Gilman, who was a player there. And Sid Gilman learned from Fanatical Francis the passing game a little bit. Now, he took it to another level. But they both are schemers. Like, let's not confuse France. Let's not confuse LaFleur with fanatical Francis here. It's a great book to read, by the way. You learn a lot about the game. This guy was so far ahead of his time that they basically made fun of him.
Yeah, I
mean, but LaFleur's not that.
LaFleur's a playbook reader more so than being an actual schemer there. Should he be on the hot seat?
No, because the guy that hired him's not going to put him on the hot seat. You know, I mean, Mark Murphy's running the team. That's who runs the team. I keep telling that to Big Daddy all the time. Big Daddy wants to get Gutekunst fired. I said, Big Daddy, Murph's your man. Like Murph's your guy. Murph wants to get in the Hall of Fame.
CEO.
Like, Murph's after the Hall of Fame. That's what he wants. Like, he runs the team. He basically did what got Kennedy killed. What got Kennedy killed was he splintered the CIA. He basically wanted to take away the CIA. So he fired Alan Dulles, Richard Bessel, all the sacred cows of Intel, right? He fired them all. And so basically there was a conspiracy from within. Nobody believes it. If you listen to the tape of Lyndon Johnson talking to the Senator Russell down in Georgia, if you just listen to that tape and listen to them talk about how crazy the single bullet theory is, you would believe what I'm telling you, but nobody listens to it. So anyway, my point here is he splintered the dynamics of how the Packers operate. When Ron Wolf was there, he ran the football operations. The head coach had his role. They worked together. They had alignment, and they worked. When Murph came in, he couldn't do that because Ted Thompson had it in his contract from prior regime. Mm-hmm. But once Ted retired and subsequently died, God rest his soul, that Murph came in and splintered it. So, like I keep saying to Big Daddy, stop blaming him. Stop blaming Murph. Stop blaming LaFleur. Stop blaming everybody. It's Murph.
It's a bad scene right now in Green Bay for the Packers. Let's go to the desert here because the Seattle Seahawks went ahead and got a 31-21 win over the Arizona Cardinals. Seahawks improved to 6-3 on the season. Geno Smith, Michael, get this. Geno Smith has 6 games with a 100-plus passer rating that leads the NFL so far. But I know you wanted to talk about the mayor, once again, disappointing yesterday afternoon.
Well, look, I mean, you know, Geno, like, I thought Geno was really good yesterday. I mean, he was under pressure. He took some hits. His accuracy was incredible. Only 8 incompletions in the entire game. And what made me believe Seattle's a really good team is when the game became 24-21, and I think there was like 5 minutes left to go in the game, Seattle went and moved it right down the field. They run a bootleg to Fant, and they go right down the field, and they score a touchdown. You know, and they go right in there. I mean, they went 5 plays, 80 yards, and they scored. 5 plays, 80 yards, and scored. They got the ball with 3:32 to go in the game, and they basically put the game away. And look, give Pete credit. They're running the Rams offense. Like, this is Sean McVay's offense to a T, to the bootlegs, the submarines, all the movement. I mean, they're running it better than the Rams ran it. And actually, to be honest, Geno Smith is running it better than Goff ever ran it. Because Geno Smith's tougher than Goff. Geno Smith will stay in there and take a hit. Goff is like, no, get this ball out of my hand. I don't have nothing to do with this bad boy. Like, just think about that for a minute. And give them credit. Now, let's talk about the mayor. I mean, I put the mayor in my bottom 5 quarterbacks in the NFL this week in my column. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how anybody defends the mayor. Like, how do they – the guy's average – the guy – so here's where quarterback ratings are all screwed up, okay? So the mayor throws the ball 35 times in the game. He throws for 175 yards. He gets sacked 5 times. He's got a 101 quarterback rating. 35 passing attempts to gain 175 yards. Now, let me just read to you what transpired over those 33 catches that he had on his attempts. He got – Rondale Moore averaged 8.6. Ertz averaged 8.0 a catch. James Conner averaged 3.8. Hopkins averaged 9.0. His long play was 22, right? Enos Benjamin had one play for 15 yards. That was the only explosive play. Colt McCoy could do this. Colt McCoy could give you 5 yards of play. I mean, like, you pay $250 million? I mean, like, I would be, if I was Michael Bidwell, I'd be going losing my mind. This is what I paid all this money for?
It's a bad scene, but I know the mayor has played poorly. And the mayor is somebody who I defended this offseason, and I can't defend him for what he's been doing so far over the last few weeks here. But I also point back to the coach, Kingsbury. I point back to the 12
penalties.
Yeah,
everybody blames him. He's trying to manage an unimaginable. Like, you want to coach this asshole? Like Big Daddy says to me yesterday, he says, let's start the love affair. I said, what are you talking about? He said, let's just start to play love. I said to him, I said in the text, I'll read it to you. I said, this was classic. Only he could come up with this shit. I said,
Big Daddy was on fire yesterday.
I said, why don't you go tell Rodgers he isn't playing anymore? So you know what he said? I would. I'd trade him this offseason. This is bad to watch. He may get hurt. He's been hit so much this year. At some point, you've allowed Murray to happen. And I'm not absolving Kliff from it at all. I'm not. I think Kliff's as much to blame. Kliff is the lightning rod.
Mm-hmm.
But the core problem is their whole team. Like, they have no culture. They have zero culture. Partly because their quarterback is not well liked. I mean, let's go back to Buda Baker laying on the field. And there was one player off to the sideline who didn't want to see it, right? Like, let's just go back to that. Like, this is a team in need of culture. And Kliff's not a culture builder, never was one. And then you bring a quarterback in who's the anti-culture. Do you think Billy Beane's not celebrating?
It's a disaster for the Arizona Cardinals as they're now 3-6, 1-4 at home, this Cardinals team here. But, Michael, let's take our first break on the podcast. On the other side, we'll get to the upset we saw in the Meadowlands between the Bills and the Jets.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
All right, Michael, the AFC East, boy, this division is really shaping up to be something special. We saw yesterday the Buffalo Bills, the best team in football. I've been saying it all throughout the offseason, all throughout this season. You've been echoing those same sentiments. But they went to the Meadowlands and lost to the New York Jets yesterday, 20-17, only 3 points from the Bills in the second half here. What went wrong for Buffalo yesterday?
Well, I mean, look, let me just say this. I think, and I've said this before, and I didn't know he was hurt. I wish I would have said it on my show on Sunday morning. But, you know, when they don't have Matt Milano in the game, they're just not the same team defensively. They're just not. Look, the Jets are a team that I think can play these six back offenses because of the speed of their defensive front. Like, the reason to play these six-back offenses, you got to be very fast up front. You can't be plotters. You can't have slow guys. You got to be able to tackle really well, and you've got to be able to run really well inside out. And the Jets have a defense that can do that. What I marveled at yesterday was the fact that the Jets were able to get Allen on the ground 5 times. I mean, you get Josh Allen tackled 5 times for sacks. That's 5 negative plays. To go along with his 16 incompletions, that's 21 plays that he had in the game that didn't work. 21. Now, you typically, what did they have in the game? I think usually you get, they both had 61 plays.
Yep.
So you start with that pretense that you basically sacked them 5 times, you forced 16 incomplete passes, and you intercepted 2 passes. So now you're at 23 negative plays out of the 61. One-third of the plays the Bills ran were bad plays. And the Jets give them all the credit in the world. They did exactly what I thought they would have done against the Patriots, is they said, Zach Wilson, you're not playing today. You're going to throw the – we're going to 25 passes. You know, we're not going to try to make it down the field. We're going to try to run the ball as best we can. And they did. They got 34 carries for 174 yards. And I think they played the way they had to play the game. Credit to the Jets. I mean, you got to give them credit for it. I didn't think it could happen. I thought to me that the second, fourth quarter, Allen would take over, but they got him on the ground 5 times. I mean, that's remarkable.
Allen, after the game, said, quote, it's tough to win when your quarterback plays like shit. And I thought he was honest about how he played. And it kind of reverted back to, I was speaking with our producer, Stephen Bond, diehard Bills fan, part of Bills Mafia. I was speaking with him before the episode, and he said, hey, this reverted back to kind of 2018, 2019 Josh Allen, especially early on in that game when you see the interception in the red zone, and then you see the other interception to Sauce Gardner. And it's just, I don't know. I don't know if he was forcing it or what was going on with him, but do you think that he was just kind of trying to press a little bit too much in this game?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I think to me, you know, it's to me, he hasn't gotten in a rhythm in the last 2 weeks. He throws two interceptions in the fourth quarter against Green Bay.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought he would bounce back this week. I thought they would play better, you know. But again, you know, when you can run and chase him like they did, you know, look, he's still the leading rusher on the team. I mean, think about that. You know, the guy's got, what do you have, 9 carries for 86 yards, a 36 yard. He had 2 touchdowns like Mahomes. I mean, like, he made the longest play of the day in the running game was his 36 yards. Every other back on the team, the longest run was 9. I mean, so, you know, it's hard. And the Jets did a great job of containing him and not giving him that, other than the 42-yarder that Stephon Diggs got late in the game. I mean, other than that, they really didn't give up a big play. They made no big plays in the game. I mean, when I look at my explosive sheet chart here, right? So every week I write up the explosives, mm-hmm. you know, and so there they are. They had 2 42-yard pass and a 36-yard quarterback run. Meanwhile, the Jets had 3 25-yard run, 24 pass, and a 20-yard run. I mean, so and what remarkable for me was they had 2 they got 5 sacks for 22 yards, but 3 tackle for that to me was the game. And I think the penalties too. Look, the Jets didn't give up a penalty for a first down. That was critical. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, look, Buffalo shows vulnerability. If you can run the ball on Buffalo, and you can control the pace of the game like the Jets did with their running game. I mean, what did Buffalo end up having the ball? The Jets had the ball 32-44. What's my theory? You want to play great defense, play less defense. And the way you play less defense is you convert third downs and you eat the clock up. I mean, Buffalo only had the ball for 9 possessions, and the 9th possession was with 1:42 to go in the game.
How much do you put on the offensive coordinator, Ken Dorsey, there, and not really making many adjustments in that second half?
You know, I mean, everybody says that about the adjustments, but I think there were plays on the tape that I just don't think he made. You know, and I think sometimes when they get into these loose games where the defensive front's fast and the team tackles well, all those plays on the blackboard that look good, right? Like the opposite of that is the Raider defense. The Raiders, you know, they're horrible in space. They have no team speed. So the blackboard plays, instead of going for 4 yards, they go for 14. And I think the Jets did a great job of tackling yesterday in space. So I don't know if it was much of the adjustments, but when your quarterback's turning the ball over, here's their fourth quarter. Here's what happened in the fourth quarter. They ran 24 plays. They had 5 first downs. And they had a punt. They had a field goal and a punt. Meanwhile, the Jets had 17 plays, 5 first downs, and a field goal.
Zach Wilson, 18 of 25, 154, and a touchdown this week after that performance we saw last week against New England. And, Mike, let's spread some love here on the New York Jets, because I think a lot of people think that I hate the New York Jets. I don't hate the New York Jets. I like giving Jets fans a little bit of problems on Twitter there. But are you buying Jets stock? Like, do you think this is a playoff team? Do you think this is a team that could maybe compete to win the division? Which might sound crazy to say after what we saw a week ago, but now here they are. They just beat the Buffalo Bills, who were the team that was in first place in the AFC East.
I mean, I think they can certainly compete for it. I mean, they've proven that they can beat good teams. I mean, you know, they beat Buffalo at home. I mean, that's a hell of a win. And you can't take that away from them. And as long as the quarterback doesn't screw them up, right, as long as the quarterback doesn't fuck it up, then you got a chance, you know, and because they're not going to give up big plays. They're going to keep the ball in front of them. Their front's going to rush the passer, and they can tackle the quarterback. You know, one of the things that I think that gets often overlooked is the ability to get the guy on the ground. Last night we saw Mahomes. They didn't get him on the ground, right? They had him, but they didn't get him on the ground. Mm-hmm. You know, and usually that's the case with Josh Allen. You got him, but you don't get him on the ground, or they give him a long whistle so you can't get him on the ground. And I think the Jets will be rugged enough. They just got to continue to be able to run the football and keep Wilson from blowing the game for them. And, you know, they've done this without Corey Davis, one of their better receivers. I mean, yeah. Wilson came in and played really well. And so, you know, they got – and that's all they got. They got Wilson, and they got a couple plays from a – you know, and then they're running backs. That's it. I mean, it wasn't like they dominated this offensively. They just – they managed the game perfectly.
You got to credit Robert Saleh there, whose receipts list is looking like a CVS receipt here. He's keeping them, Michael. We'll see what happens at the end of the season. But Robert Saleh is laughing at us as they go into the bye week with a 6-3 record here. What's not funny – is the performance we saw from the Las Vegas Raiders yesterday in Jacksonville. My goodness. Jags come from behind to beat the Raiders 27-20. Vegas has now lost, Michael, three games this season with leads of 17 points or more. Like, how do we even explain what's going on with the silver and black?
Well, I mean, they're not good on defense. I mean, you know, and then when they get punched in the mouth and the team makes a comeback on them, they haven't been able to respond. I mean, so let's go through it, right? So they're up 17-0. They're playing really well, okay? 17-0. Now, here's a point in the game, and I'm sitting on my couch, and you know I'm rooting for, you know, full disclosure, I'm rooting for the Raiders and my son.
As you should.
And so, you know, and anything I say on the pod, I'm going to say to him. So, like, you got to be honest with each other, right? Like, it's you're either coaching it, you know, it's not criticism, it's coaching. And everything I say about other people on this pod is the same thing. It's just, it's coaching. So, you know, you're up 17-0. I said to myself, sitting on the couch, I was by myself, that we got to get a stop here. You got to get a stop here. Okay, 17-7. All right, we got to score, but we know they had the ball to start the second half, so we got to eat up as much clock as we can so they can't score. Okay, we score, kick a field goal. Now it's 27. Okay, they got 55 seconds left to go. They come down and kick a field goal immediately.
Yeah.
They start the second half, they score a touchdown. Okay, now we got punched in the mouth. Now it's 20-17. It's no different than what happened in Kansas City. I mean, Kansas City, they had a lead, and by the end of the middle eight, they didn't have the lead anymore. So they run five plays in the third quarter. They don't make any plays. And then the next thing you know, they're down 24-20. And then they don't have enough, whether it's mental toughness, whether it's physical toughness, whether they can control the game. I mean, the last drive of the game, I mean, they went 12 plays, 82 yards, got five first downs in the fourth quarter, and scored. And that put the game away. They had 31 plays in the fourth quarter. They got nine first downs. So the defense for the Raiders didn't play well. They don't tackle well. They're too slow. You know, Blake Martinez, he knows what to do. He can't do it. They have no speed. They got no sacks on the quarterback. They got no pressures. They didn't create any negative plays in the game. So it was, and he only threw five incompletions. I mean, think about this. You know, as everybody knows that listens to this pod, I'm a believer in rushes and completions, right? You add those two numbers together, you get there, right? But more than rushes and completions, you also have to look at incompletions. So Jacksonville, 62 rushes and completions, six incompletions. I mean, that's an ass-kicking, Femi. That's an ass-kicking. You got six incompletions, and you got 62 positive plays. Meanwhile, the Raiders, they got 40 rushes with 15 incompletions. They have too many incompletions. You got too many wasted plays. And until they fix that, and so you say, well, was it coaching, players, or schemes? I think a lot of them on defense, they're very talented. You know, Chandler Jones hasn't played to the level they hoped. What's concerning for Raiders is they get these 17-0 leads, which should highlight Crosby and Jones, and it hasn't.
It's the complete opposite of what I thought this offseason there. But the quarterback is who I think should shoulder some of this blame, because watching that second half, the minute the Jags got any sort of pressure in the pocket, like it just crumbled. From the quarterback there. How much are you putting on Carr?
Well, I mean, I don't think he's very comfortable. I think his offensive line hasn't really done a great job of protecting him. I think and that shows up in his yards per attempt. He's in the lowest yards per attempt since 2017. Wow. One of the knocks on Carr when I watched him early in his career, I thought he got rid of the ball too quick.
Check downs.
Yep. You know, and when Gruden was there, that slowly they got that up. But when you watch them play, they don't have really any explosiveness, right? So I talk about Brady. Brady needs a tight end. Brady needs a nickel. Brady needs a slot. Well, the Raiders, Josh McDaniels ran that offense. He needs a tight end. He needs a nickel, and he needs a slot. Renfrow, to me, hasn't really played to the level he needs to play. I mean, the guy had 80 catches left. I mean, the guy hasn't made a play. He doesn't show quickness to win one-on-one. I mean, Jacksonville got up in the grill and took it away. Everybody doubles Davante Adams. But there's a play in the game. I mean, you know, they got a wheel route to Abdullah for a touchdown. And Carr hangs it in the air like a lunchbox. And the defensive back, I thought it was pass interference. They didn't call it. You know the play I'm talking about? I mean, it was hard. Yeah, I mean the basically Abdullah didn't play back into the DB, which if he did, it would have been pass interference. But he kind of did, but they didn't call it. You know, it is what it is. I'm not complaining. I mean, you know, but I mean that's a touchdown. The guy's wide open. It's a touchdown. They don't make it. They don't make plays. The Raiders don't make plays when they have to make them, when the game's on the line. And Carr hasn't played. His percentage of completion is down this year. It's from 68% to 63%. Doesn't seem like a lot, but it is. And his ability to throw the ball up the field is down. And without Waller in the game and without another, like Mac Hollins is a really good fourth receiver. He's not a two. Like less of Mac Hollins is more because he can vertically run outside. He'll go inside and catch. But their skill level as a football team, they're slow on offense. I mean, they really are, other than Adams.
Raiders now 2-6 this season, as it's going to get pretty uncomfortable here in Las Vegas with this team that had higher expectations.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, though. You know, this drives me crazy. People say, well, Mark Davis met with Josh Gruden after the game.
Josh McDaniel.
He met with John Gruden after every single game. Like, go through the – like, I'm not absolving anything that's happened. They've had chances to win. They should be better. I agree with that. But the drafts, they don't have Henry Ruggs on the field. How many first-round picks do they not have on the field? Like, they're missing some talented players here. Now, there's no excuse for what they've done. They are what they are. But if anybody that thinks that they were a legitimate playoff team last year, the way they won so many close games and they're not winning close games this year, it's a little bit of a difference, right?
Well, Michael, let's go to Foxborough, where I think this might have been, honestly, the worst offensive game we've seen all season from these two teams.
Oh, my God.
Colts and the Patriots. New England.
I had to look at it twice this morning. I watched it this morning. And then I had to go back and look. And when I was putting my numbers together, I just couldn't believe how bad it is.
It was horrific here. And honestly, we talked about this last Thursday, and I didn't bet the game, but I'm kicking myself from doing it because it was the obvious play. And I said on Thursday, I was like, I think New England wins by a touchdown, but I don't really want any parts because it's Sam Ellinger versus Bill Belichick. Like, let's not outthink the room here. And I outthought the room. I didn't bet it, and I should have because that was free money, apparently.
I was on Chris Russo, and I took the Colts with the 6 points because I felt like, look, it's going to be a close game. Like, neither offense is going to be really good. I thought it would be a defensive struggle, which it kind of was. And then, of course, Ellinger throws. I mean, they're 0 for 14 on third down. Think about this, Femi. The Colts average 2.0 yards per play. But not to be outdone, the Patriots average 3.3 yards per play.
That's ugly.
I mean, this is as bad as it gets offensively. I mean, they won 23-3, which a little bit like what Vrabel's doing. They won with defense. I mean, they sacked the guy 9 times. Right? Mm-hmm. They got off the field on third down. They played great situational football, you know, and they were able to come. I mean, they go into halftime up 13-0, kind of just, you know, they had no drives in the game for a touchdown other than they got the ball spotted at the 2 and they scored off the block punt. Think about that. How they beat, and then they beat the Jets the week before with another horrendous offensive performance. I mean, the Patriots have won 5 games with an offense that, other than the Cleveland game, I haven't think they look very good offensively. I mean, Mac Jones throws it 30 times yesterday for 147 yards. He gets sacked 4 times.
That's really remarkable. 324 combined yards between these two teams. Combined 324 we saw yesterday as the Patriots go ahead and get the win 26-3, 5-4 heading into the bye, where out of the bye, they'll be hosting the New York Jets. That game should be a lot of fun out there in Foxborough. But, Michael, let's take another break here on the other side. We're going to talk about Justin Fields and Tua Tagovailoa.
Oh, we are going to talk about
Bears, Dolphins, baby. It's coming up next. All right, Michael, let's get right to it. The QB shootout in the Windy City, buddy. And I tweeted this yesterday. I thought it was the best played game from both quarterbacks in the game. It was the best quarterback game that we saw yesterday. Dolphins winning it over the Chicago Bears 35-32. Tua, 21 of 30, 302, 3 touchdowns. Justin Fields, a 95.3 QBR. Where do you want to start with this, man? Because I tweeted that. I said, hey, are we, you can still buy some Fields stock. Come join me at the table, buddy.
How are you quoting QBR? I mean, the guy throws for 123 yards in 28 attempts, and that's a good QBR? Like, how do you get that? Like, he had 106.7 quarterback rating, which is a joke, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you get a QBR? You're called quarterback,
yep,
right? You throw the ball. You threw it 28 times for 123 yards. And you, that's good quarterbacking play? Now, look, was he athletic? No doubt. Are they doing what they should do with him? No doubt. I'm 100% that he has to be in this. I've said it from the beginning. He's got to be in a six-back offense. Mm-hmm. He's not a quarterback. He's not a quarterback outside of the six-back offense. He's a single-wing quarterback. That's what he is. And like all these other teams that are running the single wing, they've got to run it 40 times like they did. He had 178-yard rushing.
Yep.
He's hard to tackle. He's athletic. But let's not – I saw on Twitter yesterday, it's hilarious. I saw on Twitter that somebody said that, you know, when are all the people that have been criticizing Justin Fields going to say they were wrong? Don't count on me being in that conversation. I ain't wrong. I mean, he's athletic. He's ultra-talented as an athlete. He's got a great arm. But in terms of playing the position of pure quarterback, no. And you can take your 92 rating. That's wonderful. To me, it just further fuels the point that rating's the most ridiculous thing you could ever see.
See, now here's where I'm going to push back, because I get what you're saying, that quarterback, the job is to throw the ball. In my opinion, quarterback, your number one job is to lead the team down the field to score touchdowns. It doesn't matter how you go ahead and do that. And Justin Fields had 3 touchdowns passing. He also had 178 running. And we've talked about these six-back offenses all throughout this season. Defenses have had trouble stopping the six-back offense. That's what this team needs to do with Fields and making him a quarterback of that sort of offense, because he has the arm strength and he is absolutely dynamic in the open field. You mentioned it. Defenses can't tackle him. He's running a 4-4 out there on the field. He is explosive in the run game. I think his job is just to lead the team. It doesn't need to look pretty, because we're not trying to win style points. We're trying to win football games. And I thought Fields did the necessary to win the football game yesterday. Now, their defense was a whole other thing, why Tua was kind of lighting them up on defense. Last team to get the ball was probably going to win that game. But I thought Fields did his job to try to help the Bears win.
Well, I think he did. I don't disagree with that. I agree that that they put him in the only role he can survive in. The question you have to ask yourself is, this role sustainable? Is this paradigm, can it work? Can he become as good as Jalen Hurts? If you feel that way, and then you got to go all in on this. Like, there's no going back. You're going to have to go all in on this offense. You're going to basically get Francis Schmidt to come into town, bring him back, you know, and start figuring out the single wing and how it's going to evolve. I mean, that's really what you're looking at. You're married to this system. And, you know, they're not good in the offensive line yet. They're not good in the defensive line yet. They're not very good on defense at all. Although, you know, in fairness to them, Miami tried to give them the game back. Yeah. I mean, they did. I mean, you know, again, they try to give them the game back. The last four drives of the game, Miami goes, they go for it on fourth down twice, don't get it. They go 3 plays and punt. They gave them the chance to get back in the game. I mean, the last 2 drives of the game, when the game is on the line, when he's got to throw the ball and the game is on the line and he can't run it, he had 15 plays in the fourth quarter, okay? Mm-hmm. They had 25 plays in the fourth quarter, right? So they had 25 plays in the fourth quarter and 8 first downs and 7 points. But in the last 15 plays, when he's got to throw the ball, they lost the ball. They had a punt and they lost the ball on downs. I mean, so like when you're behind and you have to throw it and you can't throw it, what does that tell you? Meanwhile, Miami, when they got to put the game away, they couldn't put the game away. I mean, they went 5 plays, 20 yards. They gave the ball back to Chicago on their own 35. Then they had 7 plays, 21 yards. They gave the ball back to Chicago on their own 14. They didn't get a first down. With 7:50 to go in the game, they never got another first down again. So, like, and I don't think either defense is very good. I think the problem Miami's a little like New England. They're too slow in their defensive front to play this six-back offense. By the way, Bradley Chubb played. You know, he had an assisted tackle. How many plays did he play? I wanted to look that up this morning. Let me see here.
Yeah, I saw them rotating some guys out there. Jalen Phillips was questionable. He ended up playing in that game, their young pass rusher out of Miami. But on the Fields point, because you mentioned that how they were down.
He played 54 plays and he had an assisted tackle. 54 plays, he had assisted tackle.
Well, they better get a better return on investment.
But Chubb isn't like these like the Jets ends or like San Francisco ends, they can really run. Chubb isn't like the most explosively fast. Chubb's better, might be better as an inside nickel rusher than he is an outside nickel rusher. So like Miami's not built to play a six-back attack.
I thought Fields on that final drive was getting ready to lead them down the field there. The fourth down play, I'm sure you saw it, breaks contain. Equanimeous St. Brown lets the ball go right through his hands. That would have been a first down for Chicago. So I think Fields, and the why I'm high on him is because we're seeing the progression week in, week out. We're seeing him get better. And we forget that, yes, he's a year two quarterback, but yesterday was his 18th start. That was the start of his quote-unquote year two. He didn't play that many games last year. I think we're going to continue to see, and by the end of the year, because we talked about it earlier this season, I said, let me get to the end of the year before I can give the full evaluation on Fields. I think by the end of the year, you're going to start to be a little more convinced on Justin Fields.
Well, I would say in fairness to Fields, this is really only his fourth start in the NFL because in the past they tried to make him into something he's not. Like now he's finally in an offense that they have to run. They're going to have to, like when Nagy was there, they wanted to throw it. He's not a thrower. You know, they average 5-3 a play. 5-3 a play, Femi. You know, so, I mean, meanwhile, Miami averaged 7-2 per play. I mean, so, like, I know the game was close. And ultimately, the Bears lose the game because of the block punt.
Yeah.
And they lose the game because of the block punt. But I will say this. To me, between now and the end of the year, I think you really want to pay attention to when he has to throw the ball in the fourth quarter. Can he make the throws and lead the team down the field? When he can't make a loose play. When he has to go out there and do it, can he do it? I think that's going to be the key. That's still the question with Jalen Hurts. We're still not sure about that. If this gets answered, to me, if this comes to fruition, then I think you're going to start to see 20 of the 32 teams all go to the six-back approach. I mean, Tennessee's got to go the six-back approach with Willis. I mean, Atlanta's using the six-back approach. Right. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think we're going to become the single wing again.
Yeah, there might be a paradigm shift going on here in the NFL. Last note, Fields, only player in league history with 3 passing touchdowns and 140 plus rushing yards in a game. So that just goes to show you what he can do in terms of being a dynamic player.
Well, let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Miami's talking Super Bowl. You think this Miami defense is Super Bowl worthy?
No. I don't think that's a defense that's ready. Let's see when they get Byron Jones back. Maybe Chubb gets back into the thing a little bit more and gets implemented into this defense. But so far from that defense, they're not a Super Bowl caliber defense. Tyreek Hill, my goodness.
I mean, he makes all the difference in the world. I mean, how many more times does he have to wait for the ball to get to him? Like, seriously, I know Tua throw for 300 yards. But, I mean, every time there's a key play in the game, like in the game when they had a chance, he's behind the defense. I think it was in the fourth quarter. He's behind the defense, and the defense guy catched up to him. I mean, and the ball's never out there. Look, I think Tua's good at throwing the ball in the middle of the field. He's accurate. But when he's going to have to deal with some of these better defense coordinators that have better defense, I mean, I'll tell you one thing. I give McDaniel credit. Tua never got pressured. Mm-hmm. He never got hit, and they didn't have a negative play. And that's what Tua's been really great at doing.
I can't wait to see this AFC East down the stretch, Michael. But we saw yesterday Tampa Bay Buccaneers come from behind to beat the LA Rams 16-13. This was an ugly football game there in that afternoon window, but it got compelling late. Tom Brady, 60 yards, 44 seconds, no timeouts, leads the Bucs down the field, and it just goes to show you, Brady, if you give him enough chances, he's eventually going to go ahead and get you a victory.
I mean, this was an ugly game. I mean, the Rams are bad. I mean, they're really bad on offense. Bad. I mean, they had 13 drives, 9 punts. They had 12 drives with 1 first down or less. But they weren't outdone by the Bucs. I thought the second down play calling by the Bucs was atrocious. Like, they would get in 2nd and 6. You know the worst thing in football that I hate this, when, especially when people on TV say, well, they're in 3rd and manageable. No. So, like, how is being in 3rd and manageable an advantage? So if you're a great 3rd down defense, if you're a great 3rd down offense, you're converting less than 50%. You're at 48%. That's usually the best 3rd down teams in football, 48%. Mm-hmm. So when you're in 3rd manageable, you're still giving the ball back to the defense at least 52% of the time. I mean, unless you're the Raider 3rd down defense, which was atrocious. But, I mean, to me, you know, it makes no sense. It's kind of one of those terms that people have used, but nobody's really analyzed the term. Like, what is 3rd and manageable when we're still giving the ball back to them? Well, it's better than 3rd and 10. Well, of course it's better than 3rd and 10. But maybe you should try to get the first down on two downs. Maybe you should try to play Canadian football. Like, I thought the play calling on second down by the Bucs was atrocious. They were in more second and sixes, and they'd run it again. I was going berserk. I'm watching it. Like, I mean, they ended up averaging 4-1 per play. Not to be outdone by the Rams, who averaged 3-7. I mean, the Rams are just, to me, they're horrendous. They have no speed on offense. They can't block anybody. And the quarterback's getting killed.
After the
game, how they lost that game, I don't know. To me, it's still, they give up the seam route. The longest play of the game was the 28-yard seam route in 2 minutes.
Did you see after the game, Michael, Jalen Ramsey was asked about the offense in the fourth quarter. He was asked about this Rams offense, and he said, quote, "The defense should not have had to go back on the field. Simple." Talking about that final drive and what the offense did in the fourth quarter. It's getting ugly there in L.A.
Well, I mean, look, they had 10 plays in the fourth quarter. Didn't get a first down. How about this? Ramsey played 33 plays in the fourth quarter. His defense played 33 plays. They gave up 10 first downs, and they gave up 10 points. Now, I mean, Cooper Kupp, I mean, he stayed in bounds when he slid.
What'd you make of that?
I think he gets the first down if he just tries to get the first down.
Yeah.
Smart. I mean, I bet McVay's probably cursing himself. Because, I mean, when they're backed up like that, McVay knows, I mean, this is the hardest thing to be in sports, right? He knows if he runs it three times, he's punting, right? But he wants to take away their timeouts. At least he's got to take away one of they only have two timeouts left, so he's got to try to take away them. So it's just hard. I mean, that's a hard spot. But again, it goes back to if you can't control the front, if you can't block up front, you're not any good. I mean, the Rams are a joke. They're not any good. I mean, we keep expecting them to turn it around. There's nothing to turn around.
Team is hurt. Team is bad, and they don't have a lot of depth. Good thing they won the Super Bowl last year. Otherwise, it would be an unmitigated disaster. Michael, let's keep it moving here. Vikings beat the Commanders 20-17. The Vikings now are 6-0 in one-score games, as Kirk says, you like that, going back to his former stomping grounds out there in D.C.
You know, I had this as an 8-point game. And I didn't take it. It was 3.5. I didn't want to lay the 3.5. I didn't recommend it. And I think my numbers were right. I mean, if they score at the end of the game, right, which is what they should have done, instead of just they milked the clock when they got the penalty at the end of the game, they could have scored and would have covered for a lot of people instead of some people pushed with the three, some people won with the 3.5. But to me, they were by far the better team. And you know, and look. I mean, how about Hockenson? He comes to the team. He's got 9 targets for 9 catches. Mm-hmm. You know, and they didn't really play their best football. I mean, they couldn't run the ball, but like they've done all year is they've made enough plays to win. And the play to me, which I think was the difference in the game in terms of how close the game was, but it really wasn't, was when the official knocked out the safety who's going to intercept the ball.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, that's an interception, right? And instead it goes for a touchdown.
He tackled the guy. I don't know how that happens on the field. I was tweeting. I was like, what the hell is going on? This guy just tackles the DB there. But Minnesota gets the win 7-1 as they're heading to Buffalo next Sunday. Then the game that I would call the double agent game of the century, Chargers-Falcons. L.A. beats Atlanta 20-17. Just there were saboteurs all over the field. You didn't know who was playing for which team with the mistakes that we saw. And it was capped off with the double fumble on the final drive. Eckler fumbles it. The defensive lineman picks up. He fumbles. Then Herbert leads him down, and they end up getting the game-winning field goal.
It's amazing. You know, and somebody texted me during it and said, how is Staley going to screw this up? And I'm like, I think he will. You know,
he tried, man.
I mean, he'll try. I mean, he will. Look, they couldn't stop the run. I mean, you know, Atlanta averaged 5.3 yards per play in the game. The problem was that, you know, they just couldn't make enough plays. I mean, they had 12 plays in the fourth quarter, and they missed the field goal. You know, and the Chargers did enough. They had 50% on third down, so they did enough that they needed to do in the game. I recommended this. This was a push game, you know, for the home team. You know, I'm still not sold on the Chargers. I'm really not. No. I don't think they're good enough on defense.
Yeah, I'm not sold at all either. Now they got a tough one upcoming this Sunday. Bengals got back on the right side, Michael, beating the Carolina Panthers 42-21. It was the Joe Mixon show. 5 total touchdowns from Mixon, 4 on the ground, 1 through the air, as Cincinnati is now 5-4.
Yeah, I mean, this game is over in the first quarter, buddy. I mean, it's hard for me to watch. I felt bad for Matthew, my son, but, I mean, it was over in the first quarter. I mean, they never stopped them. They never could stop them. And the Bengals look like a completely different team, you know, when they can get their running game going, when they can get Mixon going. If you don't stop the Bengals from running the football and put the pressure on their offensive line to protect, then it's your own fault, you know. And then to me, this is a game that's over. Now they got to come back. Now the Panthers have to play on Thursday night against the Falcon team that, you know, that they should have beaten the week before. This is one of those where it looked to me like the Panthers were still licking their wounds from not beating the Falcons from the week before.
And we'll see who's playing quarterback. P.J. Walker getting benched at halftime for Baker Mayfield. Mayfield went 14-20, 155, and 2 touchdowns. So a decent effort out there in relief duty for Baker Mayfield. But, Michael, let's take our final break. And there's some breaking news in the NFL that we'll get to on the other side. It's the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi. All right, Michael, we are reacting to some breaking news right now. It's about 8:37 West Coast time, 11:37 over on the East Coast. This is coming from ESPN's Adam Schefter here. Frank Reich, the Indianapolis Colts head coach, has now been fired, according to sources. Reich, 40-33 as the Colts head coach since 2018, as the Colts go ahead and make another change just a couple weeks after they benched Matt Ryan. Now Frank Reich has now been relieved of his duties.
Well, I mean, I think the Colts, you know, their owner, Jim Irsay, has been around the game a long time. I think he sees when the team basically is not responding to the coach. And yesterday's performance, as bad as it was, 0-for-14 on third down, 2 yards per play. I mean, basically it's going to be a problem. And they haven't really recovered from it. They have no toughness as a team, which is shocking. You know, so, you know, I think to me it's – I have a lot of friends there. I hope that they're able to survive all this, but it was a challenge. And when you don't get the quarterback fixed as a coach and you're a quarterback guru, sometimes this is what happens. You know, they went down that Phillip Rivers road. It didn't work. They put all their chips in on Carson Wentz, and Carson Wentz didn't work. And, you know, when you put your neck out for a player and really put your neck out and it doesn't work, you lose credibility within the building. And when you lose that credibility in the building, you lose your cachet. You know, what gains coaches the stature and the momentum? What makes Belichick, to me, I've said this for years, what makes Belichick gain credibility with everybody is on Saturday night at his staff meeting. When he lays out the game, it goes exactly the way it is. That gives him credibility. He tells it to the team. He tells it to the coaches. When you say this player is going to be great and you give up assets and he ends up being really almost a cancer to what the owner thinks of the building, you've lost credibility. The end was near.
The interim coach has not been named yet for Indianapolis. We'll find out who that is, I'm sure, later this afternoon. But also for the general manager, Chris Ballard, do you think that he ends up surviving this, or is he also next towards the end of the season?
Well, I think he does, because I think they're not void of talent. I think they're void of player development. I think they're void of a lot of things. I think he needs to get – look, remember, Ballard got left at the altar by Josh McDaniels, and Frank was the compromise candidate. But I think Ballard should have a chance to pick a guy that he can get alignment with. I really think, to me, we've got to stop this nonsense of picking all these offensive guys. Vrabel's one of the best coaches in the league. He's a defensive coach. Yeah. Belichick's one of the best coaches in the league. He's a defensive coach. Pete Carroll's one of the best coaches in the league. He's a defensive coach. Like, you got to have some toughness to your team, right? You got to have some toughness, and you got to be a strategist. Like, you got to figure out, like, how are we going to develop the players? How are we going to develop the coaches? I think that's, you know, and really only Ballard can handle that. I think he's got to look at that.
All right, Michael, let's get to the awards here before we touch on Monday Night Football. This week, who's going on the lamb?
Oh, I mean, there's so many choices this week. It pains me, but I mean, the Raiders as a team, they just didn't respond 2 weeks in a row. They take a trip down there. They didn't play well. And, you know, and I think to me, you know, I don't think Josh McDaniels is in trouble at all. I think the owner, like Jim Irsay, understands his team. I think he knows what the problems are from the past to the present. And I put the Colts on the lamb. Obviously, they belong on the lamb today. So I think there's no doubt. But I think all these people that are calling for Josh McDaniels' head, I mean, the guy, I know he took over a playoff team, but he didn't take over a talented team. Now, the quarterback's not playing well, and he's got to get the quarterback to play well. And he's got to – and like a lot of offensive head coaches, they got to make sure their defense is playing within comp. I mean, that's one of the advantages Daboll has. His defense is carrying him.
Fred Palermo, best game plan of the week. Who's that going to?
Well, you got to give it to the Jets defense. I think there's no doubt. And I'm going to give it to the Titans. I mean, they played a doubleheader. They had one first down with 5:24 to go in the second quarter, and they were in the game to overtime. That's remarkable. You'll never see that again.
If you don't know, now you know.
Milano makes a difference for the Bills' defense. Milano makes a difference. And I would also add, we did it last week, but I think the Rams are dead. Mm-hmm. I think the Rams look like crap. And I'll say this too. I think Seattle's defense has gotten better as the weeks have gone on, and Seattle's defense is fast as shit. You talk about, you know, everybody wants to give, you know, Howie executive of the year and who else is executive of the year. You know, I mean, John Schneider has quietly had a hell of a draft and has made a lot of great decisions. And this team defensively, you watched them yesterday. They're really good. They're fast on defense. They're young on defense. They sacked this guy 5 times. I mean, Pete Carroll should be in the coach of the year conversation.
He definitely is. One more submission for if you don't know, now you know. Tyreek Hill's the undisputed best wide receiver in football. Final one.
Pro Football Focus had him as the 14th best, just so you know that.
Get out of here. Get out of here.
I went crazy on my show last year. They had him like as they didn't even have – I mean, are you kidding me?
Get out of here with that. David Ogilvy Award, the biggest fraud.
Well, I mean, the Packers are frauds. I mean, let's be honest. The Rams are frauds. I mean, even the Bucs yesterday are frauds. You can't win the way the Bucs played. I mean, they're going to go over to Germany to play Seattle. Seattle's better than the Rams. Seattle will kick their ass over there. I mean, Seattle, I don't know what the line is. I haven't paid attention this morning. But the Bucs can't handle the speed of Seattle's defense, I can tell you that.
Finally, Monday Night Football here, Michael. Ravens at the Saints. Right now, Baltimore, 1.5-point favorites. No Mark Andrews for the Ravens. No Marshawn Lattimore for the New Orleans Saints. Total 46.5. Who wins?
One of the plays I gave out this weekend was I like the Saints tonight. I think it's a close game, and I think the Saints defense will do a good job against a six-back attack. And so I'll take the Saints in the points. I think they're hard to play. I think the Saints might be the best team in the South, even though they haven't gotten there yet. You know, they got to stay healthy, and Dalton can't be Dalton.
Yeah, Dalton in primetime, man. Good luck. That's a whole other thing there. But that does it for us here this week. A lot of fun that we had on this Monday. It was a lot of fun that we had yesterday.
Oh, yeah, you love it. Yeah, your MVP. I think we should vote Justin Fields for MVP. I think he's in the conversation. There's no doubt.
But let's talk some awards on Thursday, Michael. Let's do that. Some midseason awards now that we're at the halfway point there. My guy feels not going to be in it, but I do want to discuss
those with you.
As always, thank you to DraftKings, thank you to Veasan, and thank you, Michael, and thank you to our producer, Stephen Bond, who's with us on the ones and twos, as he always is. Subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast, and we'll talk to you guys on Thursday.
Thanks, guys.